This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's, I got the wrong date on here. That's terrible. It's September 14th, 2020. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to leave and are listening to us on Facebook Live, you can comment on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page right now, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Remember, we are recording our live shows on Mondays now using Facebook Live and then playing them back at our normal times on whus.org or 91.7 FM. We will continue to do this until allowed back into the studio at the UConn campus. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, or now on Spotify. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. Ron's rant of the week. Well, there's two things. One is, sorry we weren't here last week, but we had a long weekend away and we couldn't record our show on Monday like we usually do. So we took a little vacation week day, whatever you want to call it. But my big rant of the week is, it's starting to feel like fall outside. And, you know, as much as fall is lovely and the air is crisp and clear, big shout out to those poor folks out west right now. Their air is not crisp and clear. It does remind me of the fact that soon I may not be riding my bicycle outside as much, or I have to be a lot more selective about doing so. So, you know, my rant is, you know, I love the weather, but sometimes I really hate the weather because the weather can be really discouraging at times. So we're going to call it, it's fall-like weather, the good, the bad, and the ugly. That's my rant of the week. That's all I got. But I got a lot of positive stuff coming up. I've got, on a positive side, Tour de France. Wow. Anyone watching the Tour de France?
Nah.
Isn't it amazing that we can watch the Tour de France?
Yeah.
It's like outrageous. So anyway, we're going to talk about this a lot more in the show because I am just shaking with excitement about the tour this year. There's just, if you are a bicycle racing enthusiast and you're not paying attention to the tour right now, you really need to flip on the TV or figure it out or figure out some sort of a media source that maybe you know, give up your Starbucks habit for a couple of days and use that instead. And wow, there's just some cool stuff going on right now. It's really fun. It's really exciting. Anyway, we'll talk about that in a minute. Other things. Farm to Fork, Fondo, Connecticut. Yay.
Yay.
We did it. We did it right here. We had an awesome time. I got to share some of the roads that Fran and I ride on all the time. And that was great. That was wonderful. And we also hosted our guests, which were those who work for the Fondo and also own the Fondo. We got to host them right here in our backyard. I'll talk about that a little bit later too, but that's definitely a positive side thing. On another positive side thing, the Rocky Hill Cyclocross Training Series is on. There is another one this Wednesday, September 16th, and in Rocky Hill, Connecticut. You can get to it by going to Bike Ridge, but you do need a special code when you get there. I just want to let you know that because they are limiting the participation in it. So when you click on their link, what you're going to get is you're going to get a message that says, due to the high volume and low field limits, we password protected the event. Be patient as the race registration opens up to the public at 5 p.m. on Monday before each week. So there is a cyclocross training series. It is in Rocky Hill as it has been in the past. It is sponsored by and promoted by CCAP, which is a great organization. Big shout out to Jed. Hope you're listening. That's a positive side. That's it. It's happening. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know how they're keeping riders safe from one another. I'm not really sure how it's all working out. But if you contact them, they'd be very, very happy to share with you their protocol. So anyway, that's a big deal. I had to put it into the positive side because it's just such a perfect thing. Okay, moving on to the maintenance minute. Maintenance minute this week is single speed workshop. Convert your bike to a single speed. So if you're ever wondering how to do this, there are a number of places you can go to do this. Bike Radar is one that has a great piece here on how to convert an old frame into a single speed commuting hack. And then, of course, I got a couple of these here. So this is basically, just taking your old bike and making sure that the volume is down on your computer so it doesn't scream at you like mine just did. And you can take and create from an old mountain bicycle or from an old road bicycle. You can convert them over to a single speed. I just recently did this, and that's why I brought this up. I took an old Batavus Reynolds 531 cyclocross frame, which I had from years and years ago, and I converted over to a single speed. The beauty of that bike and the really older bicycles, if you can get a hold of one of those, is they don't have vertical dropouts on them. They have horizontals, and the horizontal dropout helps you with chain slack. So you can really get the chain dialed in just right so you don't have any flopping chains on your bike and you don't have to put an idler on. Now, that's another option that you have. You could put an idler on the bike, and the idler will be sort of like the idler arm jockey wheels on a rear derailleur. I've even seen people use old rear derailleurs and dial them in so that they can't shift, and they just lock them into one position, and then you just use that as your idler. There's plenty of ways of doing this if you want to go either, Uber hack cheap, or if you want to get a fancy one that will screw into your derailleur hanger, and you can do that too. So there are ways of doing it. I prefer to, I just want to have it so that it's easy. I've got a flip-flop hub on my bike, so I can flip it over to fixie, or I can flip it to freewheel. My knees of considerable age are happier with the freewheel than they are with the fixie, but it's not saying that I won't give it a try. The reason why I'm all of a sudden very excited about single speed, because I never have been in the past because it's really like roly hilly around here, is that we have this wonderful gift out here called the Airline Trail. And the Airline Trail is a no more than 2% rail trail. So it's perfect for a single speed. You can just, once you choose your gear, you figure out the one that works best for you, you can go out there and just spin out on the rail trail, and it's a blast. And it's, you've only got one gear, so you can only go so fast. You can also only go so slow, so you have to be able to pick that gear correctly so you get it right. But I just think it's a great way to, it makes you spin. It teaches you how to pedal through. If you're using if you're actually using a fixed gear, it helps you with keeping your pedal stroke round because you're forced to pedal. So that's good too. So there are, there's just a bunch of benefits. Plus, it's a little bit lighter bike. It's a lot of fun. I love to use it for, I rode my bike. We have a little Aldi's grocery store down in North Windham that is about 3 miles from here, I think is what it is, when you ride out to the rail trail and then ride there. And one day I just threw a Musette bag over my, or not a Musette, a bicycle messenger bag over my shoulder. And I rode down there and I picked up some groceries and then rode back. And I thought, I should be doing this more. So I think that that's going to evolve into that. I have rack restrictions on this particular frame because it is a true cyclocross bike with no eyelets on it at all. So it's going to have to take some modification, which I will probably do. And I could throw a rack on and put a grocery bag pannier on it and use it for just that sort of thing. Riding into town, buying some groceries, running some errands with it. And it's just, you just, I don't know what it is. You just feel like you're empowered by doing this because you've got a way of taking care of normal daily duties and never starting the engine of an automobile. It's kind of cool. So anyway, that's a single speed. Now, if you want to really go old school, our good friend and occasionally I will wear the shirt. I probably should have put it on today because I'm going to mention him, but the classic mechanic of all mechanics, Sheldon Brown, has a page. And the page is, I think Sheldon Brown's page is still maintained by Harris Cycles up in Massachusetts in Newton, Mass. I believe that John has kept that whole thing alive because, you know, he was a very close personal friend of John's and the Harrises, and he was doing most of his work out of their store. So, by the way, another shout out, if you're ever in the Boston area, you need to go to Harris Cyclery. It's not your normal bike shop. It's kind of fun. So, and give a shout out and say, you know, let them know that, you know, Pedal and Run is a, you know, said for you to stop by and say hi. So, miss those guys. Lots of fun. So Sheldon Brown has a page here that is called Single Speed Bicycle Conversions. So if you need to know more about this, you can switch over to a single speed. He has an explanation of why ride a single speed. He also has the single speed versus fixed gear. So that's whether you want to do a fixed gear or a freewheel on your bike. It all depends on what you're looking for. But there are a number of things that you can check out here. I love Sheldon Brown. Every bicycle mechanic on the earth that is worth their I don't know, what do you want to call it? Worth their metal? I don't know, what would they be called? Anyway, any bike shop employee that is a bicycle mechanic knows who Sheldon Brown is because we all kind of admire what he did for us way back in the day, and people still access his information. Sure enough, I Googled, and it was the second thing on the Google list that popped up when I was looking for single speed conversions. So be sure to go there, check it out. He'll talk to you all about hubs and flip-flop hubs and conventional type freewheel hubs and cassette hubs and all the different things you can do. Solid axles versus quick release axles, whatever works for you. So that's my mechanics minute, which is far more than a minute as always, but it's all about single speeds and it's a cool thing. It's totally a cool thing. So give it a try. It's really fun. If you know somebody who has one, take it out for a ride. I think you'll kind of get the gist of what I'm talking about once you do that. Convert your bike, your old bike, over to a single speed. What a cool idea. What a great little fall project. As it gets colder, you can get back out. You can just ride on a flat pedal with, you know, heavy boots on if you need to. You can really ride them anywhere. Nothing gets gummed up. There's no real issues with them. They're really pretty wonderful. Let's go back to the content of the show today. And I would like to I'd like to point out that we had our very first Farm to Fork Fondo right here in Connecticut. We had it over at the Audubon Center in Pomfret, Connecticut. By the way, if you've never been to the Audubon Center, might want to check it out. It's 700 acres of land, and it is there are hiking trails all over the place. The current airline trail improvement project is going like right next to it, so you can access the airline trail from there. It's not done yet, so you're going to get blocked off at Pomfret Station right now. But the Pomfret Station project continues to get more and more impressive as I look at it week to week. And they have built the stonework up even higher this week than it was last week. And then they're going to put a big bridge across that area and you're going to be able to go over 169, which is probably one of the most dangerous crossings that there was there. And now it's going to be eliminated by having a bridge there. So very, very, very cool. When that all gets done, that airline trail will go from Pomfret Center into Putnam, into the town of Putnam. Not really sure how they're going to access, because I know it comes in high and you're going to have to drop down off of it somewhere there. But it's just beautiful. The whole area it goes through is, it's the quiet corner. It's why we call it the quiet corner. It's just lots of farmlands and open back road areas. It's really, really pretty, which is why we brought the Farm to Fork Fondo tour to Connecticut. And I've been, shout out to Tyler Wren of Renegade Sports. I've been begging him for years to come down and do this. And so this was his first experience with Connecticut on our side of Connecticut, or as we like to say, the right side of Connecticut, or the quiet side of Connecticut. Anyway, we brought him down here, and I think he was impressed. I got lots of kudos on this thing. He had no idea that Connecticut could be this beautiful and how nice it is out here. So as much as we are trying to keep this corner of the state quiet, that's why they call it the quiet corner, and we say, shh, don't tell anyone. If you ride a bicycle, come on in. Come on in. Come check it out. We love to see bicycles out here. The more bicycles we get out here, the less cars we have out here. Pfft, doesn't get better than that. That's a beautiful thing. So anyway, Farm to Fork Fondo, Connecticut, great time. Our friends from Renegade pitched their tents in our yard, and we fed them, and we just had a great time. As always, the protocol with that bike tour is they're keeping their numbers down really low this year so that they keep it safe. And if your feet are on the ground, then you have a mask on. If your feet are on the pedals, you can drop your mask down. So pretty safe. Fran got to be a tour leader this time.
Yes.
And was involved with that and did an excellent job. People are always they're always happy to see Fran. Fran's fun. She's a character.
I'm okay.
You're a character. You are. You're totally a character. Absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah. So anyway, we had a great time. It was really fun. It was great exposing people to Northeastern Connecticut. A big heads up on that is that we're a little hillier out here than they are in some other areas. I would say that the Farm to Fork Fondo in the Berkshires is probably going to be of the same level of
right.
hills.
Yeah.
And that's the Berkshires. I mean, it's mountainy out there. So I don't think we're quite as hilly as that, but our hills are different out here. We got a lot of short, punchy stuff. Big shout out to We Like It Ice Cream. They were a big help with us. Dragon's Blood Elixir, who gave us hot sauce for everybody's goodie bag. Really cool. The Farm to Table Store that is in Woodstock, which is a must-see if you're out riding bicycles in this area. And then we went to Taylor Brook Winery and Brewery now. Mm. So not only do they have wine there now, but they also are brewing beer. And I was told by those who can drink it, I can't, because I have an allergy issue, that it was very good. So big shouts out to all those that helped sponsor us, and a huge shout out to the Vanilla Bean Cafe, which catered our lunches for us too. And so they did a wonderful job. The sandwiches that they made for us, including gluten-free options for Fran and I, which was nice, were excellent. It was just really, really nice. And again, it makes one of those nice little, I'm going to go for a bike ride and stop at a cafe and have something to eat or whatever. And we got great spots out here to do that with. And, you know, mask up, be safe, bring your sanitizer with you. The Farm to Fork actually requires us all to carry small bottles of hand sanitizer in our back pockets, which we do. And if we are touching anything that doesn't belong to us personally, we sanitize our hands. So there's ways of doing this, ways of doing it safe. And that is going to segue me right into the Tour de France. So let's go to the tour. Anybody out there, excuse me, anyone out there watching the tour? Anyone? Must be.
Yes.
Must be.
Me.
So I'm gonna work on some highlights here. The tour's been going on for a while now. We're in a rest day right now. So this is a quiet day. And then tomorrow we will start on stage 15. And so if you've been watching it and you happen to check out and see stage 13, wow. This is why I love bicycle racing. The drama and things that happened in stage 13, the changes in time. Oh my God. It was just unbelievable. Unbelievable. Big, big hills. We're into some serious mountains here. The elevation gain on stage 13 was 4,400 meters in that stage. It was the biggest of all the 21 stages this year. So all the names were there. They were all doing the work. Team Ineos is trying very hard to defend its title with their winner from last year. And Egan Bernal was in a very pretty good position on that. And then things happened. So I'm not going to do any spoilers here because I think you really need to figure out a way to follow it and watch it. You can watch past episodes. If you go to, what is it? latour.fr/EN, that will get you the English version of the Tour de France site, and you can kind of check it out. And each of those, as it has been a past stage, there's a video clip which does a highlight on it. So if you missed it, you can always go back and check it all out. But you got some catching up to do if you're just starting out, because we're about to hit stage 16. But before we go to stage 16, all you Tour de France fans, anybody see stage 15? It was yesterday. It was, wow. That's all I can say. I can just say, wow. It was just outstanding. It was the classic, you know, mono-mono fight in the hills. Huge stage, just a huge stage. Big, big mountain finish. I'm watching this thing, and I'm taking a look at it. And let's see, is this the one I had here? I think I might have to go to it. So this would be stage 15, and we'll look at the profile on it. The profile was just tremendous on this thing. It had a mountaintop finish. It had two Category 1s before the mountaintop finish, and the first Category 1 was 11.1 kilometers at an average of 8.1%. That'll break your legs. 8.1% is pretty punchy. And we have 8.1% climbs around here. We have 10% climbs around here. But we don't have them for 11 kilometers.
No.
So it was just, that was the first. And then that's where the attacks began. And the attacks just got crazy. And there were big breakaways and just drama and people falling off of the breakaways. And the other thing is, and this is the craziest part of it, is the Jumbo Lotto team, used to be Lotto, Jumbo Visma team, hats off to them. They were outrageously good as a team. And one of the key riders for them that was putting on, you know, the powertrain in the front to keep things going was Wout Van Aert. And he's a cyclocross guy. He's a 3-time world champion cyclocross man. And now he is a stage racer. And he's really good. And so all of us who live in the world of cross, as I am wearing it here on my, I'm wearing my Mansfield Hollow cyclocross sweatshirt here. You know, we're just wiggling with excitement because, you know, we got a cross guy who is doing amazing, amazing things in the road racing world. And there are more than just him. So we got some big names out there. They're doing some amazing things. But the big thing that, and I'll give a semi-spoiler alert on this, of the Jumbo team, is that the Jumbo team they just pressed the pace so hard. I've never, ever seen a stage like this. And they were even commenting on this as we were watching it on the screen, that the average speed of the Peloton is a lot higher this year. And it's because they basically, Jumbo did exactly what former Sky team was doing. And they just got up front and hammered until they just kept dropping people and getting rid of the competition. And they started putting serious pressure on some big names in the back. I'm going to leave it at that because I don't want to give it away. The second climb in this, though, the second category one on this was 6.9 kilometers, averaging a 8.9% grade. So just about 9% on that. And then the last one was a beyond category climb. The beyond category climb was only 7.1% average only. And it was, and this is why it's beyond category, it was also 17.4 kilometers. So it was insane. And there were points on there that were 15%, including the finish line. The very last piece of it was at 15%. And you got to see it. You just got to see it. Super cool. I'll talk about it more next. I don't want to ruin it for anyone. But next week I'll be probably talking about it more, as far as exactly what happened. But this is bike racing at its finest. And yeah, we held off until late August, early September to do the Tour de France. The weather's different. You know, there's still that real high heat like you get in August, but it's not as bad. And they're riding to the point also that it's getting darker earlier, so the sun is coming down a little bit more. So it's the weather has changed. This is going to be a really, really interesting Giro and a really interesting Vuelta a España because, you know, they have also classically had weather as an issue. The Giro's weather is, are we going to be able to get over that pass because there's still 14 feet of snow on the ground? Because they're usually in April, May, so it's still, you know, the Italian Alps haven't melted yet, and some of the passes are not open, and sometimes they have blinding snowstorms, and that's not going to happen this time. I don't think we're going to see any snow in the Giro this year, so that will be a lot different, although the Giro will still have its, you know, beyond punchy climbs, and they are, you know, they have some of the steepest climbs out there. And then the Vuelta has always been just a roasted fest. I mean, it's in August, and it's really hot in Spain, and it's open, and it's exposed. It's just an environment that is really, really difficult for the racers. And this year, it's going to be after the Giro. The Giro is going to be 3 days after the Tour. And then it's, you know, that's what we're looking at. And then we have the Vuelta. So if you're a bike racing fan, my recommendation would be to get out early and ride your bike, because you're going to be glued to a video source, a media source, and you're just going to. You may expel more energy than you expected just watching the race, because there's great, great races going on. This has made the teams really be careful about how they choose which squad they're going to use for which event. I know Ineos has plans to win all three this year. I know Jumbo is making that a lot more difficult. That's all I can say at this. Joel Chance says that he will need lights. Joel, you're going to need lights pretty soon climbing up to the top of East Rock too, to do your morning weather report. If you're not familiar with it, Joel does a daily weather report on the top of East Rock in New Haven. And he does it by riding his bike up to the top of East Rock, which is an endeavor in itself. So shout out to Joel. Nice to see you out there. Let's do lunch. Anyway, yeah, there's some good stuff. And if you think that's good, wait until you see what's going to happen on stage 16. Stage 16 is promising to give us yet more high levels of difficulty. It's if you look at the profile, again, I am on latour.fr/en that for the English version of it. And if you take a look at stage 16, you're going to see it is brutal. Again, just absolutely nasty stuff. There's a couple of like roly things in the beginning. So there's a cat four short, 2.3 kilometers, 6.8%. That's like a bump for these guys. And then there's a lot of slow downhill, and which is never slow with these guys. And then they're going to hit a sprint down low in the valley and at about 44 kilometers. And then they have a stage two climb sitting in front of them on the Col de Port. And we're looking at 7.4 kilometers at 6.8%. So, a nice little climb that might separate a few people. We see a lot of things going on right now. This is the moment that if you're a domestique for a team and your team really doesn't have a whole lot of chance of winning the tour, but you're pretty strong in the hills, this is your chance to shine. And these domestiques will they'll take off on one of these climbs and inevitably they get caught, but sometimes they don't, which is why it gets really, really exciting. So things change. They don't really have a chance of gaining enough points or time bonuses to put themselves up in podium level, but they do have a chance to get out in front of the camera and really make a splash and really sell themselves and what they can do. And some of them go on to become, leaders of their group because they have a really good shine. They go out, they win a stage, and it's a big stage, and they show what it takes to get there. And so, we see the rising stars a lot when we watch some of those domestiques when they take off. So big, big tip of the hat to the domestiques. Remember our buddy Bob Roll, who is commentating now for a number, well, he's on NBC now, I think. He was a domestique, and now he's got a pretty lucrative little career, I hope, in broadcasting. So he's done a great job, and I love listening to Bob because Bob makes it all real. He's the one who threw out the, when they asked him, what is it like to crash your bike, Bob? And his explanation was, well, think about getting into a car and going about 35 miles an hour, opening the door and jumping out naked. That kind of says it all. You slide, you scuff, it's just bad. There was a very tough crash in the last stage. Unfortunately, one of the Colombian riders went down pretty hard, and he was no longer in the race. He's okay, but it was very, very emotional. I felt so bad for him. The cameras obviously zoom in on it, and it's kind of tough that they do that, but he was just completely emotionally taken down by this whole event. Because, when you tell someone who's trained all their life, really, to be in the Tour de France, that they can no longer go forward because their injuries have stopped them from doing that. It's a hard pill to swallow. It really is difficult. And, you get to see, I was trying to figure this out, and I'm watching it yesterday, and, you watch the drama that happens in the Tour, and you watch just the sheer agony on some of these guys' faces and how hard they're working and you tear up a little bit. I'll have to admit, you really do. And they do too. That's something that I see in this sport that I don't see in other sports. I'm not used to seeing a, let's call it American football player, standing on the sidelines in tears. It's not kind of part of what they do. It doesn't fit their persona. But the cyclists just let it out They just let it out. It's all emotion. So it's not just the hardest physical thing you can possibly do to yourself. It's also this incredible emotional buildup that you get when you're a Grand Tour rider. It's this is a different game, folks. It's a totally different game. And I think it's why I like it so much, because it really brings out the full soul of the rider that's racing in the race. Unless we have, you know, someone, some crazy Texan guy that gets out there and he has no soul. But, oops, I did it. I said it. So, tomorrow's race, as we get through that Category 2 climb, the next climb is going to be 6 kilometers, 8%. It's another Category 2. So they drop down, big, big drop down, and then they go back up again. After they get over that, there is, it looks like, about a 20-kilometer or more span, and then they hit the last climb, which is not really the last climb, but it's the last lengthy one. It is a Category 1 climb, 11.1 kilometers, averaging 6.5%, so pretty solid climb, and then there is a Category 3 to the finish line, and it is 2.2 kilometers at 6.5%, just to break the legs at the very end and let you understand that I rode hard today. Boy, this is going to hurt. So that's a 164-kilometer stage. It will be coming up in just one day. Tomorrow is when we will see that, and then we will move on to more torture, and we go to, we're going to go to the Col de la Loze, or Loze, I guess is what they call that. This one is really going to hurt. It's another mountain stage finish. It has two beyond category climbs on it. It's just 170 kilometers long. The first beyond category, which is, it's in the race for a while. They're out for 88 kilometers before they hit it. But it's 17.1 kilometers at 8.4%. That's gonna hurt. That's gonna rip some legs up. And then from the summit of that down to the base of the next one, you'll be going from 107 kilometers to 147 kilometers. So 40 kilometers, with most of it downhill. And then they hit the last beyond category, which is 21.5 kilometers at 7.8% with a finish line at the top. Ouch. Just amazing. And this just keeps going on. This tour has 10 mountain climbs. I can't remember how many mountain finishes, but it's up there. And then after they get through that, I believe their next one is another punchy little one. And it's got a Category 1. It's got two Category 1s, a Category 3, a Category 2, a beyond category shortly before the finish line, and then 20 kilometers of rolling down, screaming downhill to finish off at 175 kilometers. The day after that, I believe they flatten it out a little bit for those who can. And then the day before the very end of the tour, there is a time trial. And the time trial is 33 kilometers, I think, something like that. I got it right here. 36 kilometers on the time trial. And you know, which is a hefty time trial for sure, and it's generally flat until the very end, where the finish on this is 5.9 kilometers at 8.5%, making it a Category 1 climb on a TT bike probably, and it's going to be spectacular. This race was really set up for climbers and power riders, and that last time trial will be a big deal if things stay really, really close as far as the times between the podium riders. Could be the deciding point of the race. It could very well be that. We'll just have to see what happens. So anyway, here we go. Oh, you want me to bring the stages on camera? I'm sorry, I can't really do that without screwing myself up here. No, go to the website if you can. If you want to see what these stages look like, again, I'll repeat the website again. It's and I'll spell it out for you. It's letour.fr/en. And that will put you to the English version of Le Tour de France. And you can actually see them. So wicked, wicked cool. Pretty cool stuff. So check it all out. It's the Tour de France. It's exciting. And it's still exciting. And I'm beside myself. Can't wait for tomorrow. More fun and games. Let's talk about masks at the Tour de France. We have had no teams expelled from the Tour at this time. None. Zero. The protocol is if you have two of your crew, of your racers, of anything that's connected to the team, two, that's it, that test positive for COVID, you're out. That's it. Takes the whole team out. So there is the potential for a team mechanic who has a drinking buddy with someone else and wants to go out and share a couple of brew with their buddy, and they end up getting COVID, and then they pass it on to, let's say, one of the massage therapists or one of the other soigneurs. This is like they're out. They could take a yellow jersey off the podium by doing that. They're being super strict about this. I think they're doing a fabulous job. I know that France has increased cases right now. So they're extra careful about this because they just went into the red zone in France.
Oh,
and I don't think it's the Tour that's doing it. It also coincides with back to school, which has been a big accelerant of COVID, of the COVID cases. So, let's say Fabrizio. Hello, yeah, Fabrizio. How are you?
Yeah.
Nice to see you. Very nice. So I have a not related to me, but we have the exact same last name and we both come from the same region of Italy. And we are probably related and we consider ourselves family since Fabrizio came over here and met all of us, which was really sweet.
Oh,
and a huge shout out to my sister, Susan, for putting that all together. It was just great. But he's watching right now. So that's cool. That's totally cool. I hope to see you again soon. I really do. I'm working on something in Italy. I'll let you know about that another time.
Are we going to Italy?
But I'll talk to you about that later.
Okay.
I'll talk to you about that later. I'm working on something. So anyway, the Tour is just so exciting. So back to masks. I was talking about mask protocols. So what they're doing at the Tour to make it safe is, of course, the entire crew. You'll get a stage winner comes in and you'll see all of them, all the crew people, the people that are driving in the cars that are support, the team managers, they're all masked. Everyone has a mask on. When the rider crosses the line, you can see them. I mean, they can't stop but hug them. I mean, when these guys are like, they put out this valiant effort and won a stage, you see the hugs, but they're all masked and they immediately hand the rider a mask and he puts a mask on. So they're being super careful because you as a rider, you don't want to be riding by a crowd of people and then, you know, get exposed because the people on the side of the road aren't wearing masks. Well, guess what? The people on the side of the road are wearing masks. They're very strict. They've been really good about it. They're so strict that in the mountain stages in the past, the party is to rent a camper or take your camper and drive up the mountains and pull off on the side of the road and then, you know, pull your tailgate out and have a big party and wait for the riders to come by. Well, the police are stopping them from doing that. You cannot drive to the top of any of these mountains in the Tour de France this year. You are not allowed. They will stop you. The police will stop you. They'll turn you around. They showed some footage. I was watching some footage of some people that are pretty upset that they couldn't go, but they can't go. That's it. If you want to go there and the pass is open, and not all of them are open, they closed a couple of them off on stage 15. They wouldn't allow anybody to go up there. But if you can get up there and are willing to do it, you could ride your bike up. That's kind of cool. Or you could walk up. So they are allowing that type of transport to get up there, but they are not allowing motorized vehicles to go up there. So I think that's pretty cool that they're, you know, you basically, so if you're a really, really, really solid enthusiast, you are obviously going to have some, maybe have some fitness behind you, and you'll be able to get up there and do that. But they, yesterday when I was watching, they were even stopping traffic from going beyond checkpoints. And then even if you were pedestrian or bicycle traffic, they said no. There were a few people up there. They might have snuck up the night before and camped out. But, yeah, it's, they're being real strict, and they're doing a great job because the teams are all clean so far. So it's really, really wonderful. And it's great that everyone is watching out for them and taking care of them, because that's just a good thing. So mask protocol, it works. It really does work. It sure does. Nice things happening in the Tour de France this year. And we're going to have more soon. Another thing that I wanted to bring up, let's see if I can pull this out of here or not. This is not going to pull it out here. We're going to make that go away. So we have a, some on the state side here, there's a few things going on. First of all, a big shout out, and we're thinking of you. Anyone out on the West Coast right now, they're on fire, and they really literally are on fire. They're being told on the West Coast that the air quality is so bad that they are not to go outside at all. And get this, I just heard this one too. You are not to vacuum your house because the vacuum cleaner will exhaust the air supply in your house and will spread around some of the smoke that's creeping in.
Oh, wow.
You can't vacuum. So you're not to do that. The air quality is horrible. It is at a level that is extremely, extremely dangerous. And, you know, we were watching Bill Maher the other night, and he said it looks like it's snowing outside because of the soot that's falling out of the sky right now. It's just really, really scary. So I bring this up because as I was perusing through, and I have been meaning to bring this up for a while, there is something going on that Bike Portland is doing in Portland, Oregon. Probably not doing today because of that, but they have set up these things called traffic gardens. And the traffic gardens are blooming in Portland. And in the traffic garden, if you go to bikeportland.org, you can see this. And it's, you know, Portland, Oregon is obviously a very, very bicycle progressive area. And they basically, in 3 short months, 10 vacant schoolyards and parking lots in Portland have been transformed into miniature neighborhoods. These traffic gardens were created to give kids and families a place to pedal and roll together in a time when safe outdoor activities are in high demand. The traffic gardens aren't new, but they flourished in Portland recently because of the work of a local physical education teacher and renewed interest from the city of Portland and Multnomah County. Yeah. So the phys ed teacher is Cesar Chavez. Phys ed teacher at the Cesar Chavez School in North Portland. And his name is Sam Balto. And his interest is in getting people to be more active goes way beyond this day. When we first met Balto, he was placing red plastic cup bike lanes to illustrate the need for more protected cycling space. He was honored with a Weston Award from nonprofit Oregon Walks in 2019, called for more open streets in Portland in response to COVID-19 pandemic long before the city of Portland got on board. So here it is, folks. You want to see things change? Go do it. Go out there and do it. Get involved. You know, it's not time to sit around right now. Now is, we are ripe for advocacy right now, like more than ever before. There are more people on bicycles. There are more people outside walking. There are more people that are looking for things to do outdoors than ever before. And so if you've got an idea, this is the time it'll go through a lot easier, because people are, they're just, they're jonesing for a place to do something. So you gotta help out. Get out there. You have an idea. You want to see. You know what? I'd ride my bike, but there's not a safe place for me to ride my bike. Go to your town. Go talk to them about it. Hey, I need a safe place to ride my bike. I want to be able to commute into work and going down Main Street or whatever it is that you're going down. Maybe it's a street that runs parallel to Main Street. Whatever it is that you need to get, you need an artery to get yourself to work. Go talk to them about it. This is the time that you might be able to convince a town to take out one level of parallel parking on one side and create a bike lane. It's happening all over the world. This is the time that we need to do this sort of thing. We've got an opportunity here. It's laid out in front of us. Bike Portland is just alive and kicking right now. And, of course, they're inside and kicking at the moment, but they will be back outside again soon. This is our chance to make a huge impression on the world. And cycling has all of a sudden become an extremely popular idea. Not only is it a great idea for physical fitness and getting out and recreation, but it's transportation. And it's transportation that we who are very strong in advocacy in the bicycle world have been asking for years. But this is just an opportunity. That's what I see. I know that COVID is terrible. And I am very aware of it, and I'm very, very sorry for anyone who's had any losses from it. But we have an opportunity that is just staring us in the face. It's not staring us in the face. It's jumping up and down and shouting at us. Let's make it happen. Get involved in your town. Find out what you need to do it. When you hear the first 10 no's, remember, after that, there's a yes. Someone's going to say, hey, that's a great idea, and you're going to be able to move forward. But you have to do the work, and you got to get out there, and you got to make it happen. This is my shout out to you. This is my request for you to get involved in this. It's really, really important. We are so ripe for this, and we are ripe for it now, and in a couple of months, when it gets colder outside in the Northeast and all the northern areas across the country, it's not going to be as easy to do because people are not going to be as receptive to it. So while the weather is still good, while the weather is still somewhat dry in some areas, you want to make the push now. Now is the time to plant those seeds, and maybe actually your bike garden will bloom in your town too. So that's my bike garden story that I wanted to bring out about Bike Portland and what they're doing. And it's just a cool, cool thing that they're doing out there at the moment. Big, big shout out to them. Pretty cool stuff. In the industry news, just a short rundown here because I'm going to have to leave here in a few minutes. Will the 2020 style demand for bikes continue into 2021? There's the question. Anybody have any input on that? Send me an email, bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Love to hear what you have to say. Or just friend me on Facebook. Let's talk about it, because there are things going on that are, we're at a very interesting crossing point in the bicycle industry right now. The bike shops that I talk to locally are just starting to see a trickle of product coming back into their stores. 2020 is less than three quarters over, and it's shaking out as the wildest roller coaster ride in the industry's memory. And I can say that because I was a 44-year veteran of that industry, and I've never, ever seen anything like it, nor have any of my friends who are still in it. They had no idea it could be like this. This is a big deal. There were, you know, between the COVID factory closings and then the extreme popularity of bicycles and people that just had to get out because they still had to go to work, but they didn't want to ride on mass transportation, so they started riding a bicycle to work. This is a big deal. It's a huge, huge turning point in the industry. So we're going to talk more and more about this as we get into further episodes of Bicycle Talk, because we're into September already. We're like they say, we're, you know, three quarters of the way through the year, and we have yet to see what is going to happen here. Yeah, we should bring a bike shop owner in as a guest. I agree. And I think that would be a good thing. I have to find one that's not tired and cranky right now. Not that they are, but I can tell you right now that we had this thing when I was a rep in the industry. We used to call it the August disease.
Oh.
And the August disease was you'd walk into a bike shop and everybody was just grouchy. Because they were tired. They'd been working all summer. They were really, really tired. And I would go in as, you know, Ron the sales rep, but also Ron the cheerleader, and say, hey, guys, just hang in there for another month. Don't be mean to people. You know, cool it down a little bit. I'd love to get a guest in, and we're still trying to figure out the technology for that. But we'll have something figured out here real soon. So I think it's a great idea, and I've been having ongoing conversations with bike shops locally, and also my friend Tony down at my friend Mike Machisco at Tony's in Milford has been a regular information contributor to the show and faithful watcher of the show too. So you know I'm getting information, but it is time to bring somebody in. You're absolutely right. So we'll do that in the future. All right, guys, here it is. I am running out of time.
Well, guess what?
What you got?
Guess what happened yesterday while I was riding with you and Andrew?
What happened yesterday as you were riding with me, with Andrew and I?
I broke 4,000 miles for 2020.
Whoa! Both, you go, girl!
Both outdoors and virtual.
Yeah.
But
awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It wasn't just
awesome.
Outdoors. It was outdoors and virtual. But yeah, 4,000.
This girl rides a bike a lot. Mm. Big, big shout out to Franny. Say hi, Franny.
Hi.
Hi, oh, there
hi.
You
go. Hi, hi. And Patrick Tan says hi from Singapore, too.
Oh, cool.
And apparently he speaks Italian.
Oh, nice.
So
he should talk to Fabrizio.
So we're waiting to find out why I need to learn Italian.
Okay. Well, we'll get to that in another time.
Okay.
So
it's
not set in stone at all
okay.
yet. So
all right.
Anyway, events, the CCAP Rocky Hill Cyclocross Series this Wednesday, September 16th in Rocky Hill, Connecticut. It's at the dog park. It's been there for years. You need to go on to Bike Reg to find out more information about that. Check it out. The Farm to Fork Fondo is continuing offering mini tours, which are a huge success. People are just so excited to do these tours. It's really been a good time. And they even have your own self-supported mini tours. So you can just get information from them and they'll send you on your way. So we ran into four people from Boston that were doing that on Saturday, which was kind of cool. Finishing points. It's the tour. We're not done yet. And the beauty of this is that when we are done with the Tour de France and we go through our Tour de France withdrawal 3 days later, it's the Giro. So much for withdrawal. Back at it again. Here we go. So great enthusiasm here. So much excitement here. You heard me talk about getting involved with your local towns. Please do it. Please get out there. Do whatever you can do. Find, if you're timid about it, find someone who's not, and let's make this all happen. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. My name is Pedlin Ron. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. Hey, there's her hand. There it is. This is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to this on Facebook Live, on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, or on a podcast, and you'd like to comment, send me an email, bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, and now on Spotify. If you want to contribute information, contact me, bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedlin Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. Thank you so much for listening.